This is for the men who never settle. The ones who believe only quitters end a game in a tie. The type of guys who choose the bar with the biggest TVs to overcompensate for theirs at home. This is the Lodge mentality. This is Twin Peaks.
Welcome back here on the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Soren Petro with you. Let's talk some soccer. Peter Vermees, the manager for Sporting Kansas City, joins us here in the program right now. He's brought to you by our friends at Corona, Corona Light, Corona Premier, the Corona Hard Seltzer. You can check those out as well. The Corona Refresca as we start heading in to the warmer months. And, of course, the Corona Non-Alcoholic. My buddy says absolutely the best tasting non-alcoholic beers, the Corona Non-Alcoholic. For me, the Corona Premier, less carbs, less calories. Get it wherever you buy your Coronas. Proud to bring you our soccer coverage. Let's talk to Peter Vermees. Peter, thanks for the time. How are you doing, sir?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. I'm frustrated. I can only imagine you do a better job, I think, of compartmentalizing things and moving on because you have to, because you have the, you know, the day-to-day operations to tend to. But is this one sticking with you a little bit more? An obvious, blatantly obvious miscall puts the ball in the hands of Philadelphia and gives them a chance to tie it up. I mean, have you gotten over it yet?
I mean, I'm over it. I'm not over the way it got there. Probably never get over those types of things because I just think that there's just too many mistakes in that period of time that easily could have been resolved, and that's why our sport is unlike any of the others. Very rarely in the NFL or the NBA or even the NHL, Major League Baseball, very rarely are the referees the front and center of the game. When they are, it's a really controversial call, right? But in our sport, there's always something about the ref, right? In every game, they want to be a part of the show. And I just think they have to take a lesson from the other sports and understand that you do a great job when you're not a part of the show, right? When you're not a part of the controversy. Because that situation that occurred in our game, I mean, honestly, it's so simple. And that is, even if he makes a mistake, which he does on the throw-in, right, because it's ours, when the guy throws it in, just blows a whistle because it's 4 minutes. Nothing happened in the 4 minutes that they gave. There wasn't a VAR intervention. There wasn't any substitutions, and nor were there any injuries. So what would be the reason for adding another minute of time on top of the four? And that's where I say, like, why would you put yourself into that controversy? That's where I see the problem in our game, which you don't see that in other sports.
When they compute how much time is going to be for extra time, do they have somebody who's got a stopwatch and they go, okay, it's 4:37, and if it's 4:37, do they hold up four or do they hold up five?
They probably will. In that situation, they probably err more on five. And that's why I say, like, the 4 minutes were the 4 minutes. To not call it at the 4 minutes makes zero sense. That's where, to me, all the controversy is. Even if both guys, you know, they're caught up in the heat of the game and maybe the linesman is looking at offsides and not the who hit, you know, the ball going out of bounds because he wasn't sure. I can accept all of it. I can't accept the 4 minutes. That's the part of it.
I guess so. I'm saying, like, do they round up? Like, is there someone who won? Their
yes.
job is to stop
is
watching.
Somebody, yes, there is somebody who's taking care of that to pay attention to substitutions, goals scored, VAR interventions, injuries. Like, all of that is being accounted for, correct. And then they come, then all the officials come together basically, and, you know, somebody will come, that person will come back to the center ref and say, hey, we think this. And then he'll say, agreed, or maybe as or off a little bit, but it's right there. And so once it's hit, where normally you add on top of that is what I just said, is if
right.
within that 4 minutes, an injury happens with a player or there's a VAR intervention or like we try to throw in like three subs at that point and just really slow the clock down. That's where they have the flexibility. But this warranted none of that.
We know soccer doesn't operate like, hey, it's five or less. I mean, it's just kind of this ambiguous thing. If there's a scoring chance, you keep playing. But I guess, you know, is four, it's no more than four, or it's at least four and no more than five?
Well, what will happen is the officials will cover themselves and say, The four is a minimum number. But everyone knows in our business that the four is a minimum number based on nothing else happening within the 4 minutes. And so, okay, so that's the number that you're going with. You're going with four. Referees just don't add on extra time just because they feel like it. They normally add on extra time because something's occurred. So the reason why it goes to five, basically, is beyond me. And that's where, you know, I can tell you this way, and this is probably the easiest, and we should probably move on after this. But if you're a referee in any sport and you're going into a game, you know who's the home team and who's the away team, right? You have the ability to control your destiny as well if you're a really selfish referee. Because, like I said, you could leave that game. Nobody would have – if he would have blew the whistle at 4 minutes like he should have, there's nobody in that stadium, including the, you know, 35, 40 people on Philly side, would have complained – that you didn't hit the 4 minutes, right? Everybody would have been good with it. But what he does is he actually goes the other way and he disappoints basically, you know, I'm going to take a guess there was, you know, somewhere around 23,000 altogether involved in the game one way, shape, or form. But now you disappoint 22,960 people. Makes no sense to me.
We're talking to Peter Vermees here in the program. Do you worry with the slow start you had last year that this becomes a mental thing for your team? That's like,
no,
here we
no.
go again.
We're I mean, our game, the way we played the other night was fantastic. And I'm a big believer that over time, performance is what rules the day. And so, you know, if you just going on the road to Houston, getting the point there was fantastic. We could have gotten three maybe, but I don't know if that game warranted 3 points for us because I don't think either team was all that good. It wasn't like everybody was firing all cylinders. But this game deserved a different result for sure. So I'm not at all. Not even that's not even a question in my head.
Any frustration? You dominated the first half. You dominated statistically the entire game. I know they brought on some subs and got a little bit more competitive towards the end. They being Philadelphia, talking about this most recent match. But any frustration that you didn't convert another chance?
I mean, I'm happy with the attack mindedness, the aggressiveness for us to go at the other team. Like any team at this time of the year, your timing is not exactly where it's supposed to be, but the actions were excellent. We really didn't give anything up through the run of play defensively, which was great. There was one action in the second half where they had a throw in, they threw it in, a guy got it and served it quickly. There was one action that was a little bit dangerous. Outside of that, we're pretty darn good. But I'm very happy with the aggressiveness to go forward and the chances that we created.
The goal you did give up in too much stoppage time, I think every sane person agrees. But the way it was given up, I saw some people kind of critical of Tim Melia. In fact, the broadcast was a little bit critical that he could have punched it out better or should have gone and gotten it. You agree with that, or did Tim play that?
Yeah, I think Tim would say the same thing. I think that he realizes that he probably could have, you know, punched the ball up and out. That's one. The other is maybe it's a little bit more difficult to take a chance, but catch it. Could he have? Yeah, sure he could have. And it's, you know, I'll say it this way, and it's not protection. At the end of the day, as I told the guys, we're not going to be a victim. We're not going to be a victim. We have to take our responsibility in the game, because there was, if you want to use 95 minutes as the total time, it's supposed to be 94, it went to 95. In 94 minutes, we could have done some other things that we could also kill the game off. And we're gonna always think that way, and I'm always gonna try to get our guys to mentally be ready for that. But I'm also not gonna play the other side of it and not understand that. Look, if the referee decided to go 7 more minutes longer, right? At the end of the day, that's 7 more minutes of chances that you're giving to the other team, right? And so you can look at it so many different ways. For me, there was 4 minutes, should have been called, but there's a lot of little things that we could have done within that minute of play. A lot of different things that we could have done to manage the game. And so, you know, is it a lesson that I would like to have learned? No, I wouldn't, because I think that like I said, the game deserved a different result. But I'm going to use it, and I have used it as a teaching moment to the guys, and hopefully we're going to be better for that moving forward.
A lot of the same guys back, some guys not back, but a lot of the guys back. Do you think that gives you an advantage to get off to a quicker start this year?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we have two guys out right now. In Logan Ndembe, who was out from last season, and Kyrie Shelton, and Kyrie is already doing stuff on the field. The surgery is going to be faster than if he'd never got the surgery. So we're in a good position. We have a lot of healthy bodies, and we have we have a good group. So I feel like we're in a good spot.
Do you feel like you're going to go shopping during the window when it comes up?
Well, we're now and for the summer window, we're trying to really get another player in that DP spot that we have available. We have it available because right now, well. Like right this second, we don't have it available based on the way we just constructed our roster in the short term. But we can always move something around to reopen that spot up if we find the right person to fit that spot.
Where's your level of confidence that you'll get that done?
I mean, I wouldn't even say confident. I would say that I'm not thinking anything other than by summer window, we're getting somebody. That's how I'm looking at it. We are getting somebody.
You we've talked a lot about that. You know, oftentimes the champion in the MLS is not the one seed. It's not the Shield winner. It's a team that peaks at the right time, right? Soccer is not a sport that lends itself to the American playoff. Neither is baseball, as a matter of fact, lending itself towards rewarding what has been the best team over the course of the year. How have you tweaked how you go about putting the team together in an effort to try to be peaking at the end? You clearly were peaking at the end last year. Right, some of that was health. I know you have guys all over the place that were down to start the season, but what do you do differently now than the way you used to do it?
So one thing that I did completely differently this year was, and I would say that most coaches probably think the way that you think prior to this, and that is, and I'll give you the example. So you go into preseason, and you think, okay, I want all my guys in, and you're hoping that everybody comes back at a certain level of fitness, and then you bring them all in, and all of a sudden you realize, I don't know, let's just say you got 30 guys and eight of them are not at the at least that minimum threshold that you want them to be at. And so what you do is you don't want to start messing around with your training sessions and all that. And so you just use the preseason to start to get those guys fit, and you put them in training, and they're training with everyone else. Problem with that is what happens a lot of times is those guys wind up getting an injury, and then they're out for 10 days, and then they jump back in, and then they're in for 2 weeks, and they get injured again, and they go through the cycle, and they're just never really there. So something I did this year completely different is we did two different fitness tests for all the players when they came in, every single player who came into our team. No matter what time they came in, they all had to do these two tests. And we did two because I wanted – because sometimes it's like tests, right? You take one test, you're really bad at that kind of test. You take another test, you're really good at that kind of test. So we did two different tests. They're all testing fitness. And so you either, when you're done, your results either put you into a green light, a yellow light, or a red light. And the easiest way to kind of give you what that means is if you're green, you're good to go. You're in training full, no moderation, just go. If you're in the yellow area, basically you'll perform at about 75% of the training each day, and the other 25% will supplement with some just individual conditioning without any resistance or anything with you. It's just pure conditioning for you. If you were in the red, you're probably 50% of training, and then the other 50% is supplemented with individual fitness training. And so we took the approach at that point is now looking at each guy individually, not just the ones that were in that yellow or red, but all of them. And what we did was we built them up over the entire preseason as individuals and not as the group. And so you have certain guys that are 90 minutes fit. You have certain guys that are 70 minutes fit, certain guys that are 60 and so on and so forth. And what it did was when we came back for the first game, I would say other than Johnny, because Johnny had a little bit of a, for that first game, had still a little bit of a knock from one of his from the last game that we played. Outside of him, everyone else, and except for Kyrie and Logan and Dembe, everybody else was ready to participate in some way, shape, or form in that first game. And so my objective is to try to keep the team as healthy as I possibly can throughout the course of this season, which I think will make us much stronger at the end because I won't have to sacrifice guys when they need a break. I can because I have people available, not because we're just banged up and get so many injuries.
Up next, tough challenge, go to LAFC. What does LAFC look like this year to you?
Well, they're in a better place because of last year. They were in all the competitions, which we've been in the past. You know what happens to you. And they were tired. They were banged up. And they just didn't have the pop that they usually have. They have the pop back again because they're not having to participate in all those different competitions. Good transition team. You know, they go from winning the ball to attacking you really quickly. And so you've got to be really good in the transition moments against a team like that.
Yeah. Do you think they're one of the teams to beat still?
I do. I think they're a very good team, explosive. And they still have some more maneuvering to do in their roster as well.
How is the atmosphere in their building?
In their place? Very good. Yeah, it's very good. It's if it's a day game, it's not as good, but if it's a night game, it's a great environment. Yeah, it's you know, what I would say to you is their stadium is imagine it's whatever, 12, 13 years built after hours, after coming and seeing ours and using that, and now all the upgraded, you know, it's an upgraded stadium of ours, and it's bigger. It's a great environment.
I've actually been there because we have to go to USC a lot, and so it's right there by where USC is, and it looks like a fantastic stadium. But LA fans are known as arrive late, leave early, and sit on your hands. Like, that's not how...
Not LAFC.
Yeah, I know the soccer culture is better than, say, the Dodger, the baseball culture as a whole, so it's going to be louder than a baseball game. But compared to other stadiums, is the LA crowd?
I'm not claiming they're the best. They're in the top echelon, and I'll tell you, their supporters group behind the goal, tremendous, really into it, and they got a nice section that's kind of steep, so it really is a. It's an intimidating, you know, environment there. It's pretty cool.
Sporting in LAFC Saturday at 9:30 is the next match for Sporting Kansas City. Time for our Final Four with Peter Vermees. It's brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. If you suffer an orthopedic injury in everyday life or playing sports, the University of Kansas Health System offers orthopedic walk-in care. They're right there at 435 and all in Overland Park, weekdays 8 to 7, Saturdays 8 to 2. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/orthopedics. Peter, I will start you with this. We've been testing this all day, so I'll get your thoughts on it. When it comes to wings, bone in or bone out?
Bone out.
Yep. Bone out. Man likes his nuggets is what we've got there. That's not a nugget in your mind. That's a bone out wing.
Well, okay. let me say this. I'll say bone in, but here's the thing. I like them crispy, man. And I like to add my sauce myself, if you know what I mean.
Yep.
I don't want it all baked in the sauce. I like to add my own stuff because I like it crispy. So I'd say bone in that way, though.
Okay. Bone in if you can make it your way. But if not, if you got to roll the dice, we're taking the bone out.
Yes.
Okay.
And then I'm going to Red Door Grill and their chicken fingers, man. They're unbelievable.
All right. Then tell me, did you have a game day ritual?
Oh, yeah. Oh, you kidding me? Absolutely.
Yeah. What's the most odd or eccentric one you had?
Well, first of all, I had my pregame meal was the same every single game. It was two thirds of a cup of cottage cheese, a third of a cup of unsweetened applesauce, and an apple diced up, all mixed together, And that is what I would tell you is a battery. Because if you eat that, you are flying all game long, and you can't sleep after the game until about 4 a.m. because you're so charged. Yeah, I'm telling you, it is truly a battery. Like, if I'm going to do an event, like even now, like I'll eat that and here, let's go.
Did you discover this on your own, or did somebody give you this recipe?
No. I read this book in 96. It was called The Zone Diet. Probably remember.
I've read it. Yep.
And it was a guy by the name of Dr. Barry Sears who wrote the book, and he had some recipes in there, and I tried that recipe as one, and it was amazing how it worked for me. And I when I played in this league, so the next whatever 8 years or whatever I played through 2002, I had that every single pregame meal.
I love it. All right, Tim Melia, the goalkeeper kit. What's your favorite color for the goalkeepers?
I personally, my favorite color is, I like it when a goalkeeper wears all black, because I think of a cat. And that's what you need to be.
I like it. I remember, the Danish keeper you won the cup with.
Jimmy Nielsen.
Pink.
The white puma
loved it, the hot pink. That was his favorite.
He did. Yeah. It's because of his blonde hair. He loved to show it off.
My kids like the pink, so that's why I was curious. All right. And finally, we just had the NFL combine. Would you like a big MLS combine with all kinds of drills and testing and measurements and everything to put everybody side by side?
So we used to have the combine, but what's happened is that our game has moved so much more to our pro player pathway that it just didn't make sense. So now we still have, I would say, a combine, but it's not at the scale of what the NFL is, because that's where they build their teams from. It's now just a small part of how we build our teams.
Yeah. So you could do it when they're 14.
Yeah, I don't think it's the same, though.
No? All right.
No.
Leave it behind. It's a thing of the past, a relic.
It is. We still have a little thing that we do. It's similar, but it's not to that extent.
Right. Peter, great to have you guys back. It's great to be talking with you. Look forward to our next conversation.
It's No Hangovers May with Greenlight Dispensary. Enjoy their flower specials all month long by visiting one of their 4 KC area locations. Or check out their AI bud tenders at greenlightdispensary.com. That's greenlightdispensary.com.
Me too, Saran. Thanks, buddy.
All right, the Joe's Kansas City Barbecue burnt end of the hour answer.
That's right.
Paul Konerko, 48 today.
Is that the proper pronunciation?
I believe so.
Okay. Because you like to say it.
I do like to say Paul Konerko. Paul Konerko, 19 career home runs at Kauffman Stadium. How many visiting players have hit more at the K?
None. He's tops, right?
He's not. There is one. Is it more than him?
Oh, Jim Thome.
22? Nope.
Oh, shut your mouth.
Alex Rodriguez.
Really?
22, according to the baseball reference.com's Stathead, 2022.
Why, Eli, you always lapse into John Miller.
I'm not sure.
Doing Vin Scully.
A number of my impressions are
speaking Japanese.
Yeah, a number of my impressions are, say a number, a few, are someone else's impression of somebody.
Yeah.
They let them do the work. If I can't figure it out, let someone better than me do the work. And John Miller is a better Vin Scully than me, so I steal his.
Miller doing Scully, doing
the Japanese podcast. Foul.
That's my favorite.
So good. Because he just draws that out. Foul.
He came up and did that in the booth for us. And why he's not just doing ESPN, I had to have been his choice, because he was the best.
Yes.
He still is the best.
He's the best TV baseball announcer
but so funny.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. When I first met him, I asked him to sign. He was there with the Orioles. At the time, he's now been with the Giants for a number of years, but more than 20 years ago, he was still the voice of the Orioles, and I asked him to sign my media guy, and he signed it. He said, I signed it Joe DiMaggio, so it'll be worth something. He's just always on, man.
It is. We're pretty fortunate in this gig to get a chance to you know, get to be around some folks. And listen, there are some jerks out there. I'm not going to lie to you, but like... You know, one, Peter Vermees, we just talked to Peter Vermees, my mm-hmm. thanks to him and Sporting Kansas City. Love talking to Peter Vermees, you know, on the air, even better off the air. I enjoy talking to Peter Vermees. But John Miller was great. We got to talk to Ernie Harwell. Couldn't have been more of a peach of a guy.
I did my Ernie Harwell impression to Ernie Harwell down line. Because you guys were at the ballpark, and I was back at the studio. This is more than 20 years ago. And I went out that night, and hey, Arnie, we had talked before. And he said, oh, that was pretty cool. I really liked that. That was something. I was like, oh, I'm so glad you liked it, because I would have felt awful if, like, one of my all-time idols had just been like, what the hell is that all about?
Ernie Harwell was the longtime play-by-play, radio play-by-play. I guess he did some TV, too, mm-hmm. For the Tigers. And
on the corner.
Called it all the way into his 80s.
Yep.
And was still great. He's like, no, nope, that's it.
Still had that great timbre, just like Scully. And then he got let go, actually, when the Tigers' new management came in and fired him. I don't know how you fire Ernie Harwell.
But then they brought him back.
They brought him back.
Somebody brought him back.
Went bonkers.
Yeah,
they're
bonkers.
Like, we better bring him back.
He's the guy, if you're like, oh, I kind of remember, just Google Ernie Harwell baseball poem.
Yes.
That's baseball.
That's baseball.
Yeah.
He had that... down South Georgia accent.
Yeah.
Talk about there's a foul ball caught by a man from Travis City. He would always have someone, whoever caught the ball was from
someplace.
That young man will take that ball home to Saginaw or something like that. And just the perfect baseball intonation and just so clean and clear and comforting, and the fact that I was able to meet him, and he was just as good a person as you could have ever imagined. And one year, we used to do Sundays out there at another place. My former radio partner Jeremy Wood and I had the Sunday show leading into the final game of the season, Tigers and Royals at the K, and we had just left the air to join the network broadcast, and they banged the game. They called it because of rain, so we had to go on and do another half hour. What are we going to do? We've literally spent everything we had. And Jeremy said, I wonder if Ernie would come up with us. He went in the hallway and asked him. Ernie Harwell came in and sat in and talked baseball with us for 30 minutes out of nowhere. And told stories and had observations and laughter. And every once in a while, we would catch each other's eye with, do you believe this is happening? And when he left, we just kind of went, really? But he couldn't have been a kinder soul. And
my favorite Ernie Harwell memory. Mm. We got him to come in a couple of times on pregame and stuff, and he couldn't have, like Curtis said, he just the nicest, sweetest man you're ever going to find. And lived, I think he called the game into his late 80s, and not quite as long right. as Vin Scully, but and you know always took his walk. Mm-hmm. You know, that's one of his big things. He walked every day. You know, let that be a lesson to you old farts out there. Get out and walk, right? Ernie Harwell lived a great, rich, full life for a long time. But it was like he was in August. Do you remember this? It was like 102. And, of course, the windows are open. And I look over in the booth, and we had the little booth where we would sit and watch the game as the pre and post guys was right next to where the opposing play-by-play
was. An auxiliary booth set up for second language teams,
which,
the Angels
which
and
there was
Red
almost
Sox.
None.
Yeah, there were a couple.
So
we were almost always
we're
in
almost,
that booth.
Almost always in that booth. And we look over in about the third inning. Ernie's taking his shirt off. He's still wearing a T-shirt, wearing a T-shirt.
A little V-neck T-shirt.
Little V-neck T-shirt. He's like, you know, it's too hot for this crap. And off came, like, the dress shirt, and he was just doing the game in his khakis and V-neck T-shirt, white T-shirt, and just calling away. And I'm like, I would take a photo, but I don't want to be frowned at by the other people on the Tigers podcast. But you're just like, you know, I wanted to be like, this is baseball.
That's baseball.
That's baseball.
That's baseball.
Ernie Harwell
cool,
and
clear
a
clear eyes of Rogers Hornsby.
Yeah, and a V-neck T-shirt on a 102 degree sweltering day with the 109 Los Royals taking on.
He did the Tigers through 2002, after which he retired at the age of 84.
84. Okay, I thought maybe he did longer, but man, he was good.
Yep.
So anyway, Ernie Harwell, one of the greats. I don't know how do we get to Ernie Harwell from Alex Rodriguez, but
I'm
we
not
got
really
there.
Sure.
We got there. We can do it.
Always glad to take it to Ernie Harwell.
Yes, always.
I think it was Canerco. Got us thinking of Scully, which then went us into impressions, and then that got us to Ernie. But that's okay.
That's all right. We'll take it. We'll take it and run. Little football here. Russell Wilson, Broncos are going to eat the big doings in football here. The Broncos are going to eat $84 million, right? $85 million. Post June 1 at 42.5 and 42.5, they're already $19 million over the cap. Chargers are over the cap. Raiders don't have a quarterback. Does that affect how you handle Legarius Sneed and Chris Jones? The fact that you, barring a early season-ending injury to Patrick Mahomes, who's picking? I mean, I'll give the Chargers the ability to turn things around quick. Because they've got Jim Harbaugh, and I think it's quite possible that Jim Harbaugh will get in there and you'll be like, wow, the Chargers actually are better than the Chiefs talent-wise. And, you know, they kept most of it, and now they're toe-to-toe, and we're in a race to the end. Like, that's the only way I think there's a race. Do you think there's any chance Sean Payton, buried in cap hell?
No.
I almost feel, am I the only one that thinks that, like, the Russell Wilson move is somewhat like, okay, well, we're taking a $42.5 million cap hit each of the next 2 years, is almost strategic to make sure you're employed as long as possible. I mean, he's reportedly making $18 million a year. And if you got back into the game and you're like, whoa, it's been a few years, but I don't have the same energy or drive to put in the time, and everybody in this league has gotten better while I kind of just sat and goofed around for a couple of years. If you wanted to make sure you had a third year, well, doing this, like, is that not the greatest excuse ever? Well, I have no quarterback, of course, this year, so you can't grade me this year. And next year, I've still got $42.5 million on the cap for Russell. So you can't grade me that year. Like, this assures me 4 years of employment. Now, his contract, I'm sure, is fully guaranteed. But, you know, if you want to make sure you've got as long as possible to try to get things going, not a bad strategy.
No, and it's going to work if that was the idea. No, I don't think the Chiefs should ever let what anybody in their division early in the league does change the way they operate. Because the reason that I think that they've been so consistent with this is because they've just said, this is what we do. And part of the reason why the Broncos and Chargers and Raiders got in trouble is because they did make moves based on what another team in their division did, the Chiefs, and they got in trouble for it. If the Chiefs just every year, this is what we do to be the best we can as long as we can and stick with that, and if the Chargers catch us in a year, they catch us. But we're not going to make any moves based on what somebody else does. They're not really in competition with the other three teams at this point in the division anyway. If they made moves to catch to handle anybody, it'd be the other teams in the AFC. But no, I think they should keep on doing what they're doing because it clearly is working.
Yes, but I so. It looks like it should be an easy landscape with at least two of the teams.
Yes.
Jim Harbaugh has a quarterback. I think they're going to be good. I think they're going to be tough. And I think Jim Harbaugh and the Chargers will be the one, not necessarily this year, but at some point the Chiefs won't win the AFC West, and I think Jim Harbaugh and Justin Herbert will.
The most likely scenario, easily.
So,
of the other three.
Based on that, does that change? Should it change how they look at Legarius Sneed and Chris Jones? You say no.
I say no.
I think the best
idea is to be consistently good every year. And if the Chargers are going to be good for 4 or 5 years, the Chiefs are going to want to be good for 4 or 5 years and not put, you know, whatever moves they think allow them to be really good for the next 5 years, they should do that.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, Are you okay if they end up signing Chris Jones for his 30-plus-year-old season? He'll be a young 30. He turns 30 right before training, a few weeks before training camp would start. Are you okay with that?
It's not something I'd want as a fan, but to say, I guess to a degree, I would be okay with it because I am ceding to maybe a large degree to the track record of the guy making that call. Brett Veach has made few mistakes you could be called, you know, foundational since he's been here, and made a lot of moves that have worked. This is would be the one move that would have probably the biggest price tag to it. The big price tag, risk. But I think part of why I think I'd be okay with it is just because of his track record. But it is not something I would want them to do, if that makes sense.
How many, and I just Googled this, how many, I gotta go to the next page. Let me get this number here. How many 10-sack seasons have been recorded? And they now on Pro Football Reference go back a lot further. Have been recorded by a player age 30 or older.
Ever?
Mm-hmm. Well, as far back as Pro Football Reference goes, it's a sack, which is 1960.
That's 60 years and 30 teams. It's
25.
261. Oh, wow. I was afraid to put the number up with too high. I didn't.
I think if you did it like 82 on, that would change things dramatically.
Yeah.
Which is where everything used to be.
It's less than one per team.
But, like, how productive, what do you think Chris Jones will do for the next 3 years? Let's say it's a 4-year deal that they can get out on the fourth year. But I think if you're going to give him $30 million a year and you want to bring that number down to where you can do other things this year, you're going to be prorating out $20, $25 million. So you want to bring his number down to 5, 6, 7, 8. I don't even know that you can get it there depending upon the signing bonus. But, you know, maybe get him down to 10, 12, 15. You do some other things. So you're looking at, let's just say it's 15, 30, 45. What do you think you're going to get the next 3 years from Chris Jones?
I'd like to say, in fact, the numbers I may put out there may be considered beyond what anyone thinks. And even if they get there, you might not be worth the money. I think he can be a 10-sack guy on average over the next 3 years. But I'm not sure even that is worthy of the kind of money they would spend, but it's a combination of the sacks and the things he allows other players to do. I do think there is some value there. I do think when he's not in the game, it's a little easier to figure out what to do with George Karloftis and guys like Mike Dana, although I guess he won't be here. But I think it's easier to figure out what to do with those guys when 95's on the field. So it's his sacks plus his how he spreads things out for other people. So 32 sacks.
Over 3 years. All right, we'll take a look at what others have done when we come back. It's the program, 913-3810-810. Talking a little free agent football here.
It's No Hangovers May with Greenlight Dispensary. Enjoy their flower specials all month long by visiting one of their 4 KC area locations. Or check out their AI bud tenders at greenlightdispensary.com. That's greenlightdispensary.com.
We're on Tuesday. All right, what do you expect, Curtis? 30-plus-year-old seasons.
Mm-hmm. 12, 10.
It's better than I thought, but it's also not as recent as you'd like it to be. Like Reggie White, past the age of 30, had 13, 15, 14, 13, 12, 11, 16, 12. I'm sorry, 16 was the last one. I was going the wrong direction there. So that was, it would have been from, no, that's right, yeah, from 92 on. 13, 15, 14, 13, 12, 11, 16, 12. In his 30s, he did that. Michael Strahan, at age 30, had 16 and a half, 31, had 11, 18 and a half at 32, 11 and a half at 34. Leslie O'Neill had three past the age of 30. Kevin Green had a whole bunch, right? Julius Peppers had a handful. So is Chris Jones one of those guys?
He's better than some and not as good. He's not Reggie White.
I think he's in that.
Reggie White, but he's better than most of the names you said there.
I think he's in that category. Yeah. And I get more, and I've always said big people age better. This kind of validates it even more so. I think the trading Legarius Sneed and signing Chris Jones, if you're going to sign one of them, that's the better way to go on getting return for your investment. But I still don't know that it's the right way to go.
All right, how many pitchers have had a 20-save season and a 10-win season for the Royals? Brought to you by Good Sense.